All right, welcome everyone to another Sunday afternoon here on Revolution Radio, and I'm also on PSN Radio. Thanks to Angel Espino down in Miami. I want to thank my guest first off. I had someone else scheduled yesterday, and about, 6:30, 7 o'clock last night, he called and said he had to take a rain check and do a reschedule. So actually yesterday I had my guest on. Wasn't my show. I was hosting for another network, People's Internet Radio. A lot of people know that I'm on the Irish network over there, and I'm a host and a producer, so I can do it all. I have all the equipment to do it. And the my guest today is a kind of a co-host and a regular contributor to People's Internet Radio. And as I mentioned, I hosted the show that he's a contributor on. And so I kind of mentioned to him earlier on yesterday that I should get him on the Revolution Radio show because he does have such a great radio presence and a lot of knowledge about a lot of things. So I want to welcome from Cork County, Ireland, Del Amitri. Welcome, Del.
Hello, Stephen. How are you and all your listeners?
Oh, very good. I know a lot of people in the Revolution Radio chat here. Well, they like to hear the Irish and the English accent for some reason. I do too sometimes. There's a lot of accents I have trouble with. I get a thick Scottish accent on, and it can be hard to follow. But anyways, we're going to go over a lot of topics over here. A lot of topics that are solution-oriented.
Well, a lot of people out there tend to define a lot of problems and that type of thing. We tend to work from the solution side of things, really, you know, simplify and find easy solutions, because normally the solutions are within our reach. We just can't identify them, you know, we can't really find the tools.
Well, I think
probably because of our upbringing and societal influences and our training and the rules we've adopted or been pushed into and all sorts of factors, you know?
Yes, I do. I think there are quite a few solutions out there, but choosing the right one might be a bit of a task for a lot of people. A lot of people will use aggression for a solution. And, I'm one that's doesn't believe in aggression, but you know, a lot of people do.
Well, it's a false energy, really, and it tends to create more conflict, you know. Normally, if you can, sometimes you might have to strike a chord or you might have to make a mark of some kind, you know, but normally being passive is, we found anyway, the way to go.
Well, I have been a fighter in the past, Del. I have used aggression as a solution in the past, and I found out a long, long time ago, I heard the saying that it doesn't matter how big and how bad you are, there's always going to be somebody bigger and badder than you.
And normally it's the quiet ones you want to watch.
It is. It is. And the skinny little guys, too. They're wiry and strong and fast.
Well, I'm over 6 feet tall, so, the big guys are always watching for the small guys because they're the guys with the swift uppercut that... you know, the bigger you are, sometimes the harder you can fall.
Yes, it is. I thought we would start off with the, with the illusion that government is. I've been getting a lot of flack here lately. I say that, well, I'll say something like, government is nothing but an illusion. It's really a conceptual idea, and it just freaks people out. They don't know what I'm talking about.
But do they listen to what you're saying and do they actually consider it before they get freaked out?
No. That's also another thing, though. People can hear what you're saying, but they don't listen.
Yeah, that's a societal thing where a lot of us are trained to that, you know, from a young age to accept what is presented to us and not to question it. And that's a difficulty, that's a state of awareness. It's something that we must all work on, really, you know, to sort of deprogram that which has been programmed into us. Because from a young age, you know, your first day in school, you were told to sit in that chair there. And if you have a question, raise your right hand and ask the teacher, and the teacher will get to you when they can. You know, you have to make allowances that there's another 20 kids or whatever in the class, and onward bound. So even if you need to go to the bathroom, you got to ask for permission.
Yes, and that's also going to depend on if you're the teacher's pet and you get chosen first or second or third or whatever the case happens to be.
And also whose son or daughter you are and that type of thing. Some, you know, all sorts of factors. You know, whether you're a boy or a girl, the teacher's own history, their own personal life, what's going on there. They can bring all sorts of things into the classroom.
Well, certainly.
And if we're schooled in that regard, then from a very young age, we get quite sensitive to asking questions. So the teacher teaches the, what's the word for it, the that which he or she is given, you know, the syllabus. Do you call it syllabus over there?
Yes.
So the teacher teaches the syllabus. So, for example, he's given the history book, if it's history he's teaching, for example. So he teaches that history. He's not allowed to vary outside of the syllabus. And if you ask, you know, as a child will, ask a pertinent question, the teacher can't really stray from the syllabus because the world is getting apparently more and more politically correct, more PC all the time. So that narrows the focus then, and the child's questions are never really answered.
Well, is it PC, Del, or is it just...
Well, it's a belief. Yeah, it's a belief. It's a self-limiting belief because, you know, what is politically correct? You know, you see, we're listening more and more to media all the time, and the memes of media are very fearful. They convey an awful lot of fear to us. So, you know, we have to watch what we say when we say it. So, for example, you know, we probably won't be cursing tonight because I think it's mid-afternoon over there. You know, we're before the watershed, so we can't use any foul language even to make a point, right? So, for example, our language is immediately limited. What we say then, we have a belief that we have to be careful what we say. So, you know, you don't want to appear to be sexist, just from the point of view that we'll say you're a man. So you can't overly criticize women. Likewise, if you were a female, you can't represent yourself as too much of a feminist, or you'd be labeled as a man-hater. This labeling is all around us and all the rest of it. Just, so it just becomes a little bit crazy. So when we listen to an argument or a new topic, we can be quite close to it because we're coming in a sort of a blinkered fashion that we don't listen to the conversation in the round. So we don't listen to, we'll say, somebody conversing or making a point for 15 minutes and take what they say in terms of an average. We, you know, if they hit a nerve anywhere at all, we're pre-programmed to close down, become fearful of what they're saying, what they're suggesting. It might be a little bit outside our remit and it might, you know, challenge us a little. And most of us, because we're quite programmed and controlled, wish to remain in a safe place from that very young age and probably throughout our lives, you know. So, for example, if somebody's an accountant, it's probably because, you know, maybe their daddy was an accountant, maybe their career guidance counselor pushed them towards that, the school encouraged that type of direction for that child or student, and so they ended up in that role, you know. So they've closed down their artistic tendencies or their other tendencies that weren't acceptable really for that role. So, for example, you know, an accountant mightn't want to wear long hair or dress in punk clothing or anything at all like that, you know, because it's not the industry norm or the professional norm. You get my point?
Yes, I do. I wanted to get into the illusory aspect of what you're talking about, though. I've had 7 professors on my show. 6 of them were PhDs, and each and every one of them, I posed the question to them. Well, actually, I asked them, what happens when academia entertain or look into conspiracy? And each and every one of them said they lose their government funding. So my question is there a political ramification to looking into something other than the official story, or maybe the official teaching.
Or the syllabus.
Yes.
Anything outside of the syllabus is excluded.
Yes.
So, yes, of course, that happens in all sorts of areas, you know. I mean, for example, we'll say when people are in a state of questioning or in a state of fear with something new. So let's say, for example, tomorrow morning, I had a pain in my stomach and went to a doctor and got a diagnosis of cancer, for argument's sake. I would immediately be sent to a consultant probably, and he would prescribe chemotherapy, and more than likely 6 months down the road, I'd be quite bloated, retaining fluid, kidneys would have given up as a result of the chemotherapy and radiotherapy.
Malnourished
and probably die of, kidney failure in the end. The efficacy of chemotherapy is apparently less than 3%. That means that only 3%, it only positively affects 3% of the recipients. So 97% of people either are worsened by it or don't respond positively to it. But that type of thing is not brought out. So, you know, immediately I'd be excluding the alternative health side, the herbal side, which, you know, ancient knowledge would be excluded there. If I mentioned it to my GP or to my consultant, he'd say, no, not on my watch, you know. He'd probably recommend surgery and further shock the system and all sorts of things, you know. So, I'd immediately be honed into a certain manner of operating with that if I don't start critically questioning things. You know, the path is already laid out. I'm the one that would have to stop and think and make informed decisions on that, you know. Now, I'm not saying somebody shouldn't take chemotherapy. I'm just saying that in a fearful situation, we should consider things.
Yes. And I also...
More than we're taught to do, you know.
Yes. And it's also the fact, Dell, that if you tell a doctor something, you have a pain here or you have a little symptom or whatever, and they do a load of tests on you and they find something, they legally have to treat you. The medical system has to treat you legally. And, you know, and
well, that's because if you phone a doctor, let's say you have a sore toe, and you phone a doctor to meet with him tomorrow at 11 o'clock. You've made an appointment. You've appointed him to take care of your sore toe. You've appointed him to, vis-a-vis or with regard to your health, to take care of that issue. So by appointing somebody else, you've set up an agent to take care of that issue for you. So you're no longer in control. You've appointed them to take care of it. So if they expand their role and, they find a problem somewhere else as a result of their batteries of tests and series of tests, then you've appointed them and they'll assume that role. But you're, at the end of the day, you're the one that appointed them. So, we might want to limit the appointments, or we might want to retain influence or control or power or management of these issues rather than just give it all away.
Yes, yes, absolutely. It's very, very similar to going into court. They really make it so you have to hire a lawyer and present your case to them. That's why it's representing.
Well, they're representing. I mean, only I can present myself. A solicitor or a lawyer will represent me, or a barrister will represent me. You know, and if you think about it, over here, anyway, in the English common law system, I'd imagine you're very similar, because apparently you're a common law country as well, aren't you?
Yes.
If I appoint a solicitor, or what you call a lawyer, he'll appoint a barrister, and apparently I'm not even supposed to talk to the barrister. You know, he's now representing, he's handling my case fully. He employs the barrister, and then the barrister talks for apparently me.
Yeah.
So I'm two steps away from, you know, I've appointed an agent who appoints an agent who's supposed to now represent me. I mean, they don't have first-hand knowledge. I'm the only one that can present myself. So why are all these intermediaries getting in on the equation? Why is that whole system apparently so complex that I require... that magnitude of professional to take care of that my issues.
Well, that's...
I mean, if I'm the one with the sore toe, I'm the one that should be in control of the treatment of same.
Absolutely.
If I'm the one with a legal problem, I should be in control of that legal problem. If I have a lawful problem, then I should definitely be taking care of that.
Absolutely. And there comes a point in the in a human's life, you know, probably somewhere past the age of 7, where they will look to someone for that sort of consultation or representation or some type of healing.
But again, you see, the key is in the words. I mean, to represent something is to not present it, is to represent it. So, you know, we're missing a cog in that wheel. We're missing a spoke in that bicycle wheel. We're definitely weakening ourselves when we appoint other people to take care of our issues. Surely something of that magnitude, if it is civil or criminal, should be dealt with by the man or the woman, him or herself, rather than an agent who doesn't have any first-hand knowledge of it and can't really speak for you. You know, they shouldn't be allowed to speak for you. Only I should be allowed to speak for myself.
Yeah. A lot of the times over here in America, you will see a TV show or a movie that's based on, I don't know, the judicial system. And you'll see the lawyer walk into the courtroom with the defendant, and he or she will say something like, no, just sit over here and be quiet. I'm going to do the speaking. And that has a dual meaning a lot of the times, because the barrister or the lawyer is trained in how to speak to the judge, and they are trained what to say and what not to say.
This is it, you see. Well, they're sworn, first of all, apparently, to the judicial system, to the courts. The client really comes second if you look at their actual oaths. Have you ever seen a lawyer's oath?
No, I haven't.
Might be worth having a look at one of those before you appoint a guy. Just as a suggestion, it might be, you know?
Right, yeah, yeah. And ultimately, they work for the Crown.
Well, apparently, there are 3 square miles in the world, as in London, the Vatican, and I think you've got one there in Washington, D.C.
Yes, Washington, D.C. is 10 square miles. I think the Vatican is 116 acres or something like that. I'm not sure how big that is, but...
Well, these are 3 islands, we'll call them, that have their own method of operation and that type of thing, that generally people in the wider economy or in the wider population don't seem to know anything about and seem to be quite excluded from.
Yeah, I guess that's a good segue point to go into the illusion that, the illusion of the shadow government, the illusion of the shadow economy. You want to explain a little bit of that first?
Well, we have 2 economies operating on the globe. We have the real economy, which are the growers, the producers, the services, you know, the guy that grows the carrots or the potatoes or the cabbage or the fruit or the vegetables or the meat that we consume. The builder of the tractor, the builder of the car, you know, they're the real economy. They're the ones that actually do something. You then have, on top of that system, relatively suppressing it, you have the whole financial services, they call it, industry, which are the stocks, the bonds, the, you know, the green slips, the pink slips, the ETFs, the swaps, you know, all of that, which seems to feed on the real economy. So, for example, the guy growing the beef or feeding the cap, he generates the beef. He doesn't control the price of the beef because the beef is set by the price of the beef is set by, apparently, by the factories who process it and repackages and distribute it via the other companies, the retailers, the big shopping complexes and all that type of thing, you know, the Walmarts, is it, and what have you there in terms of large superstores. So they all set the prices and make sure that they have maybe several times the margin that the actual farmer has.
Their overhead, yes.
Yes. So the consumer then at the end of the day is perhaps paying $10 a pound for something that the farmer is lucky to get $1 a pound for.
Or less,
so,
yeah.
Yeah. So $9 of the $10 that the consumer spends goes to other companies and corporations and processes in between.
Yes. I was told by, I was into some mutual funds about, 15 years. Well, it's been closer to 20 years ago now, Del. But I had a friend. It was a schoolmate. It was around my area. They, him and some friends, started up a little deal where they would try to sell some mutual funds and stuff like that. And they were working the stock market, or trying to anyways. But at the end of it, after 2 years and only about $18 in profits, I ended up getting out. But he said a lot of the mutual funds and a lot of the stock markets are basically robbing Peter to pay Paul. I wanted to get your thoughts on that.
If you look at the history of the directors of these companies, if you go back maybe 50 years and have a look at, we'll say, the London figures for the major corporations of the time, or companies of the time, rather, you would see that the average director got 4 to 7 times the average industrial wage. So the wage of the employee of that company, he got 4 to 7 times that. Apparently now in London, same scenario, but he's getting 35 times plus the average industrial wage or the average pay within that company. So quite a gap has developed there in a very relatively short space of time. So you have a lot of guys operating at that level and appointed to boards on these companies, state corporations, all the rest of it, that are earning humongous amounts of money. And at the end of the day, obviously, the consumer is paying for all of that, which are the little people. So it's a pyramidical system.
Yeah, I'm not sure what the percentage is, but it's pretty great. If there's a $100 million corporation out there, the CEO or the owner probably getting 10% of that.
It's also become very slanted towards corporations. You know, if I have a big corporation, if I'm controlling a large corporation, I'm going to eat up all the small guys. I'm going to eradicate all the small guys because I have easy access to funds via the central banking systems. The Fed, I think in your case, is it? The Federal Reserve?
Yes.
And over here, it's the ECB, the European Central Bank. And I can generate bonds, and which is basically swap paper for money, and do whatever I want, really, in terms of capitalizing and recapitalizing and, you know, eating up the opposition, so I can get larger and fatter and heavier all the time, and set the price controls obviously a little bit higher all the time to make more and more of a margin and more of a profit, and, you know, more and more employees effectively working for me.
Okay. So what do you think the biggest misunderstanding in the world is with the with us common people as far as the illusion of the shadow economy?
Most people don't understand it. They haven't actually looked at it. They don't think about it. They don't question it. So, you know, we're being trained and taught, and our thought process, our attention span is being fed by advertising towards large corporations and large brands. And all of that is being pushed in our face all the time. So, for example, Coca-Cola shares are always up, and, you know, we're buying bigger, smarter, more colorful cars, and, you know, it's becoming quite crazy, rather than supporting the local guy who is the actual producer, the actual carrot grower. If I'm buying carrots, I want to buy them at a local market direct from the producer so that he can grow a better quality carrots, or else I end up eating mass-produced, under-mineralized, over-phosphated product, which just mightn't be that good for me health, you know, it mightn't keep me that healthy, and so I'd be effectively starving my own brain then, and it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy that it just becomes more and more and more and more, and the little guy gets smaller and smaller.
Yeah, I think the idea that I think just literally billions of people on Earth, billions of people just don't realize what the job of a corporation is to do. The only job a corporation has is to create profits for the shareholders by any means.
Well, as they borrow more and more money and pay more and more interest, and again, you see, it's all part of the same cycle. It's becoming
I lost my guest there. See if I can get him back. Not sure what happened. Just dropped off there in mid-sentence. Well, I'd like to be able to take a break, but I'm not able to until I can find out what's going on with Dell here anyways. I wonder if he even realizes that he's dropped off. Okay, but I think until he does come back, I'm just going to have to waffle on. I guess I'm on Studio A, so I'm not totally positive what the Skype call-in is for Studio A. It says up here on the screen 347 688-2902. So if anybody would like to call in, have something to talk about, we can. Don't believe I'll be able to waffle on for 90 minutes all by myself. And I don't want to have dead air here either. Don't really know what the issue is over there. I hope his computer didn't just shut off on him. It does show being yellow. His signal is yellow, so I don't know what's going on. Hopefully he'll join us when he comes back. I hope it just didn't turn off on him. But, well, I'll just continue on until he does come back. But, anyways, I think there is a big illusion out there. And as I said, if anybody wants to call in, I think the Studio A Skype is 347-688-2902. And I'm already lost. I guess I should get into what... Okay, here we go. Hello, Patrick.
Hey, how you doing there, Steve? Looks like lost your guest, and I didn't want to see you...
Just...
stuck in the water.
Didn't want to see any dead air there, huh?
Well, I hate to see you vanless.
Yeah.
He's real good.
Yeah, he is. He's taken just a few weeks off there. But We are going to do some more things together. And I had the guest I had scheduled called me about 6:30 last night and said he had to had something else come up.
Oh, so you pulled Ben in on the just in the nick of time, as it were?
Dell, yeah.
Oh, why am I calling him Ben?
Well, because Ben's been on the show the previous times.
It's just an Irish show, and I thought I was hearing the same voice. Okay, I got you.
Kind of similar there.
Yeah.
I'm looking at his Skype signal and it's gone yellow. I wonder if it kind of shut off on him or something.
Well, he's left the screen, right?
Yeah.
You could try it. Did you try a recall?
Yes, I did. Yeah.
Okay. Often, if it's yellow, it won't even ring.
Right.
Wait. Now here we have. He's coming back. I see him.
I'm trying to bring him back in. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Do you have a studio today, or does somebody else have it?
You have it.
No, oh, yeah, I do. That's right.
But you just started a little while ago, right?
Yes, I did, yeah.
Yeah, I was lying down and I just turned on the sound just to see what was happening.
Yeah. I hope his computer didn't reboot on him or something like that after...
It's possible. Yeah, he'll come back if he can, you know, and does he know that he can call in by telephone? The audio's never really as good, but still, you'll get your man.
Well, he is over there in Ireland, and I don't even know if I don't even have a number for him, so
yeah,
just gonna have to wait for him to come back up on.
Yeah, I was just saying that in case he's still able to hear something, because Skype and then the studios are not attached to each other, so. Not that he'd have had a studio open, because that wouldn't have worked.
Oh, like, SJ just said, I have SJ on Skype. I can bring him in. I guess maybe he wants to come in or something.
Yeah, bring SJ in. He'll fill your time for you.
Yeah. Sorry about all that typing. I just sent him a message. But SJ can hear. He said... Skype's not working?
Skype's working fine for me. It worked fine this morning when I did the show.
No, I mean the number. He said the 347 number's not working.
I don't know. It might not be, but that has nothing to do with Skype. Skype would be Freedom Screen, or if you have SJ as a contact, just
I do.
Tag it in.
I do. Hopefully he's got his radio turned off.
Yeah.
I just heard him on the last show. I just heard him... Hello, SJ.
Hello, Steven. I heard you were having problems there, and I thought I'd call in and chat with you if you'd like to fill some air.
Yeah, I don't know what happened to my guest, Dell. He's over there in Ireland, and I don't
know. We've been having fairly strange phone and Skype connections lately.
Yeah.
We've always had them, actually. But actually, they were getting better, I thought, but we drop people occasionally.
Yeah, I heard you the last 5 minutes on Painter Show.
Oh, I was having a great time. I've been thinking about this ever since I was a kid. My mother was into reading science fiction.
Right.
And let me turn off my radio. I think it's. I'm trying to. There we go. Yeah, I've been interested in science since I was a little kid. My mom was into science fiction, but she was also into teaching me anything I was curious about. And she had a great librarian that basically was very fond of her as a young kid, my mother. And I met her when my mother was an adult that was having children of her own. And that woman, Miss Lawless, was an incredible aid to me because she'd let me pursue any information I was curious about. And the last part of the program, we were talking about which direction we can go in and which directions we're going in. And one of the directions I'm interested in is particle physics. And one of the things we're finally getting onto is how to take the strong force in gravity, which is hooked up to the substance of the atom. You know about atomic weight, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so atomic weight is the more things you add to the nucleus.
Yeah, hang on a second. Del, I'm getting a bad feedback from you.
I have no idea where that noise is coming from.
Yeah, that was my guest.
Okay, can you hear me now?
Yes, I can. Yeah.
Oh, good.
My sincere apologies to you and your listeners there. I was midpoint
Are you having
and
a
my computer just went into shutdown.
That's what
So
I
I had to
told.
reboot.
That's what I told Patrick. I wonder if it just didn't shut down on him. Updates or something, huh?
Everything just started switching off and it closed down and had to reboot the whole thing, you know? Too much going on sometimes.
I guess.
So I'm sorry for interrupting you. Carry on there, and I'll join in if you wish.
Well,
We do wish. It's good to have you. My name is SJ. I called in to offer Steven some airtime, just something to chat about. It's good to hear from other countries here in North America. I'm in Canada.
yeah, by the way, SJ, I guess you have been listening to the conversation before Dell dropped off, right?
Right. Was very good.
Do you have any, I don't know.
I'd like to let me hang out and I'll add to it as it develops.
Okay. And I want to thank Patrick also. He called in and come to the rescue too, Dell.
Yeah, Painter is a mad painter is our producer, one of them. And he does wonderful stuff in terms of this. He's covering it even off of his airtime. He was going to snooze. Yeah, good dude, eh?
Yeah, he is. All right, Del. Well, I know you're a
Where were we?
mid-sentence, but I
Yeah,
wasn't
we were
sure.
talking about the real economy versus, we'll call it, the shadow economy.
Yeah.
That the shadow economy or the government and the corporations are sitting on top of the real economy all the time and profiting from it and feeding on it.
Yeah, and I think I made the point that a friend that was selling some mutual funds and stuff like that told me that it was basically robbing Peter to pay Paul.
Yep.
Absolutely, because somebody's got to pay for all that.
Well, one of the things that popped up here, this is SJ again. One of the things that popped up was the fact that if you look at the total debt of the United States, it's more debt than we have property to cover it.
Alleged debt, isn't it, SJ?
Yes, sir.
SJ, I'll just add to that. If you add up all the public and private debt of all of the population on
Right.
the globe would have to revolve for 17 and a half years just to pay, which is the labor of every man, woman, and child on the globe. It would have to revolve for 17 and a half years just to pay the principal on that debt, that global debt, not the
Exactly.
interest.
Isn't that insane? I mean, when do we admit as a global culture that we're insane and we need to get sane?
I think sanity probably went out the window quite a long time ago.
It appears, apparently, yes, it does. I agree with you. I concurred. I concur, doctor.
I mean, do you ever hear any economists or politicians actually addressing that issue or even raising it?
Well, one of the things that's happening is the internet has allowed people to go out of the culture for information. You find individuals that do care, that will talk about it in detail, and do offer solutions. That's the cool thing. It's not enough just to complain. You've got to offer a solution at the end of your complaint in order to get anyone's attention legislatively. I'm still a lobbyist in Oregon, registered for a lifetime. Isn't that cool? And you can find people that do care, that do know what's going on and have solutions. It's just you got to look for them. You can't just
I think, SJ, you also have to be able to see through the rhetorical devices. You have to be able to read between the lines.
Well, there's a lot of us that are old that have figured out a few things, and we teach, and slowly the people around us are exposed at least to what we're thinking about, and that's the best you can do. You can't force people to change. Only the individual can change themselves.
It has to be their idea, doesn't it?
It does. You can't be apathetic.
And that's my point.
That's why we're talking.
That's my point exactly. That just to come in there on that.
Oh, please do.
If you recognize the problem, right? The problem is all around us. So taking it that that's a constant, right?
Right.
Taking it that, you know, this is the governmental setup. There are corporations all around us. Everything involves registration and legislation and all of that. Then the only variable in that is me.
Right.
So I'm the only variable in that. But that actually, believe it or not, empowers me. It doesn't disempower me, that
exactly.
knowledge. Because
exactly.
how I interact then thereafter defines me and how I am in relation to all of that.
Well, what I've noticed is that if you take it at a ground level thing, starting with yourself, you ever notice how it goes out like a ripple, like a stone thrown into a pond? You know, there's the event, you, the stone, entering the pond, but the ripples spread out.
Yeah. Say, yes, Jay, I got to expand a little bit on that. Sorry to
Go
interrupt
ahead.
You. I have a friend. She's a life coach. She's told me two or three times now, whatever you feel, whatever you think, affects 750,000 people all over the world.
That's
it affects
right.
the planet. It affects the universe.
Yeah, in terms of people's concept of knowledge, we have all of the knowledge in all of the minds in the universe, theoretically. I mean, we've talked about it before. We even have a name for it, which I can't remember because I have MS, which screws with my vocabulary. But the Akashic Record, hey, I remembered it. The Akashic Record is one of the ways we talk about all the information in the universe. Now, theoretically, it exists. Theoretically, we can access it, but we are coming up currently with a less hard-to-access amount of information. In fact, we're drowning in information. What we're learning is how to think about information. That's the challenge of the 21st century. Can we actually figure out a way of dealing effectively as individuals with all this information? I say we might as well. We don't have any other alternatives per se that I can come up with. Over.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, well, you know, I've heard if you have an idea or an idea comes to you, it actually come from somewhere else in the universe.
Probably.
Someone else had that idea. I think that's probably why there's been some court battles all over all throughout time where two people or three or four have had an idea and tried to have a patent and they fought over in court because of the patent, but yet they were on the other side of the earth when they had this idea and tried to invent something.
Exactly. Well, one of the things that's recently come out is that so much of the dark projects are so shielded, cut off, in other words, secured to be special information, right? That we will have to invent our version of it to even be able to talk about it.
Yeah,
because
but
it is so highly classified.
Right,
it
but
it can't be released.
Yeah, but they can't keep that idea out of the matrix. They can't keep it out of the universe. So
we've got to come up with the ground level version of it to even approach the technologies that we already have and have developed theoretically, in our society, right?
Yes.
We're going to have to come up with anti-gravity the shoestring way. We're going to have to go, okay, we figured it out. Now we're going to build the machine that can access the heavy, the strong aspect of gravity. That's what I'm currently working on. I've just recently listened to somebody really intelligent, a theoretical physicist who has actually made a lot of practical advances. And he's talking about we are getting to the point where we have, according to the Black Projects, and will finally get literally a handle on the dark, the heavy, strong force that's involved with gravity. Because there's two forces that we perceive. The gravity that keeps us on a planet, and gravity, now that we've learned how to explore the atom and all of its smaller components, well, some of its smaller components, we're starting to talk about actually being able to access the strong force of gravity that holds atoms and their particles in orbit. Think about it. And the interesting thing is, until you get way up the chart, the atomic chart, you don't get these kinds of forces strong enough to actually be accessible outside of the atom itself. And that happens with, as you get up the atomic chart to 105, particle 105 that was talked about in terms of the research they were doing at Roswell. Remember?
Yes.
So that particular atom becomes more than a radioactive element. It actually becomes stabilized in many ways. It becomes accessible without poisoning. And that's what was incredibly fascinating about what this gentleman was talking about. And I could come up with a link to his YouTube if you'd like.
Yeah. Adele, do you have something?
Yeah, just on that, okay? We're getting quite esoteric.
Oh, yeah. That's me, Mr. Esoteric.
Okay.
I'm an anomaly. That's what I am. I'm not a human anymore. I'm an anomaly.
Do you mind if I ground you there a little?
Yeah, don't cause a short. I'm pretty old and delicate.
That's okay, yeah. You mentioned that you have MS.
Please do.
You mentioned that you have MS.
Yes, sir.
So you're aware of what ALS is?
Yes. Oh, my God, yes.
Okay, I was diagnosed with ALS 3 years ago.
Oh, me too, with MS. It took forever to get him to talk him into actually testing me.
ALS, he said.
ALS.
Yeah, that's what I have, multiple sclerosis, and you have ALS.
No, I said I was diagnosed with ALS.
Oh, do you have it?
Well, apparently I had it, but I beat it within 9 months.
Good. Good for you.
Okay. Just on that, right, because you said that because of MS, you have various symptoms and that type of thing.
Yeah, I have six areas of my brain that are the size of small carrots. And I'm documenting the progress of my brain becoming less useful. I've studied psychology all my life, certainly been interested in how we think and why we think. And I am aware of the fact that I'm having problems accessing parts of my brain that I used to really enjoy accessing, like my vocabulary. I can often think of a word, I know what I want to say, but I can't remember the word. And that's happening more and more often. So I am noticing the degradation of my brain. Not my mind necessarily, but definitely my brain.
At one time I was hospitalized, difficulty breathing, limbs, all that type of thing, not functioning, all of that, weakness, all of that at one time, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And then rather than concentrate on the symptoms, I started looking at the cause.
Yeah, well, they haven't found a cause for multiple sclerosis. I keep telling them it's probably linked to environmental poisoning, but they don't want to hear that. You know, they're doctors. They've got a limited amount of information in their culture and not necessarily researching or actively pursuing. You know, most of them want to get home from work and do something else.
Okay, well, my last interaction with my team of neurologists was that they asked me how come in 9 months I was able to go from, we'll say, Z back to C, okay?
Well, I'd be interested myself.
And I said, there are three aspects to it. I said, the power of prayer, I said, probably should, because I had a lot of people lighting candles and saying prayers to me. The second aspect was complete turnaround in terms of diet and intake. And the third was, I said, I'm not going to give up. I'm not going to give in to this. I'm going to fight this with my last breath.
Right.
And I didn't have too many breaths in me, you know.
Right on.
But I said, look, I said, for, you know, however it worked, that's how I'm going to leave you. I said, I hope I'll never again meet you in this hospital. You know, if I ever meet you socially, that'll be a different scenario and we won't be talking about symptoms. We'll be talking about causes and we'll be talking about cures. Because I said, throughout here, you've wheeled me into lecture theatres and said, here, you know, here's a lovely example of ALS. Look at all his symptoms. How long do you think he has? You know?
Right.
I said, that's all you've done that's all you've done to date. You've prescribed all sorts of fabulous, weird, but wonderful medication. I said, I will never be your laboratory rat to test these newfangled medications on. And that was my decision. And I said, from the moment I made that decision, I started improving.
Right on.
So look, it's not about symptoms. It's about causes. We always get confused with the symptoms because that's... Yep. That's the deceiver. That's all around us. We're deceived on a lot of levels, but we rarely look at the actual cause, right? So there were probably a few causes in my case, in that instance, but I addressed all of them. For example, look, a lot of people have heart attacks, don't they?
Yes, sir. I have some more comments when you wrap up.
Well, we just have a couple of minutes.
I'll just make this one point, and then I'll give it straight back to you, man.
Well, I'll give it right back to you. I only have a few short comments.
Yeah, no problem. But
well, we're coming up on the break, though.
A few months ago, I was speaking to an aesthetist, just retired, and I asked him, he was standing in front of me, and I asked him, what's the main piece of knowledge, I said, that you could impart to me, having spent your life as an aesthetist, you know, knocking patients out so that they can be operated on and all the rest of it. He said he reckons that 50-60% of the patients that he anesthetized didn't need to be operated on. He said most of them were, you know, heart attack victims and things like that. And when they got magnesium and selenium in, you know, the drip that they put them on to start with,
right,
their heartbeat and everything else was regularized straight away. You know, they started recovering straight away. Mm-hmm. And in his opinion, having spent a lifetime at that occupation, they didn't need the surgery that they got. All they were was magnesium deficient, he said.
True, yeah.
So maybe we got to look at a lot of the foods we're eating and things like that and what has happened in terms of the corporatization, the Monsanto creations, and what they're doing to the food we eat. Maybe that's dumbing us down and causing us not to look at the actual causes.
Absolutely, it is.
That we're consumed with the symptoms. That's just a point I'm making, and I'll give it straight back to you.
Well,
sorry for.
No, we're at the break. We're going to have to continue afterwards. If you'd like to stay on, SJ, you're more than welcome to, but I'd like to get to the discussion back at hand with Del.
Sure. Remember to mute.
Yes. And we'll be right back, everyone. All right, welcome back to the final hour here of Kent's Look Ball on Revolution Radio and PSN Radio. I do want to say, I think one of those promos in there said that we are listener supported, so if you like what we're doing here, please go hit that donate button. The the studios and the streams and the servers, they do take money. But,
Let's keep this show on the road, yeah?
That's right. I want to get back to the original conversation there, Del. I know we talked a little bit about the shadow economy, but we haven't really touched upon the shadow government aspect of what this illusion called government is. And I do still think it is nothing but an illusion. It's if someone wants to look at it with semantics in mind, government is not really a living being. It's not a living, breathing animal, plant, or
it's a registered corporation.
Yes.
So it's a company. It's a creation. It's a legal creation. It's a dead entity. It's something used for a purpose.
Yes. Government isn't really a thing. It's more of a idea. It's just the people that are
it's,
endless.
It's a concept. It's like McDonald's, right? You walk into, if you want to walk into a McDonald's restaurant anywhere in the world, you know what you're walking into beforehand because you have the idea of it.
Yeah.
You'll see the same colors. The staff will be dressed in the same way. They'll serve the same food and roughly charge the same prices for same.
Yes, exactly.
So government, again, an international organization, it's apparently in every country, people seek to be governed on some level and they end up with the government that they vote for, apparently.
Apparently, yes. They're voting for a concept. They're not really, well, they're voting for an idea. They're not really voting for a real thing.
It's a belief system. The definition of madness, of course, is that if you keep doing the same thing, as in voting every, is it 5 years over there?
Four.
Every 4 years, and expecting different results, that in itself is surely the definition of madness.
Yeah. The Congress, people have to vote every 2 years for their congressman.
Well, I mean, have you got your homeless problem sorted? Do you have good health care over there? Is everything okay? Are they fixing all the, all the issues? Is society really, becoming more knowledgeable and empowered, or are they becoming disempowered?
Yeah, they're more or less becoming less and less powerful. We are having more and more liberties taken away, as all over the world. It's not just America here, but it's a worldwide phenomenon. It's a worldwide...
I'll give you a simple analogy for that, okay? Again, the reason you invited me on is because you've probably found that, I'm quite grounded, or I like to give simple examples in terms of when I'm explaining complex problems, that you mentioned freedom, that you're losing more freedoms. If a farmer is managing his stock, so for example, he's extracting the milk from his cows, he's milking his cows daily in order to sell a product, right? And create a profit for himself. Those cows require fencing. So his job is to corral them or fence them more and more effectively, control the inputs more and more so that he gets more and more milk and therefore makes more and more profits. That's effectively what a farmer does. So surely it's an observable fact that the fencing is improving all the time, More legislation, for example, to catch you, to snag you, to give you a shock, in terms of electric fencing, if you approach it or if you test the boundaries, yeah?
Uh-huh.
So that's a handy little analogy there for to explain all of that. So given all of that is the case, and, if anybody wants to phone in and object to that being the case, as a simple description of the problem, which is, pervades us, it's all around us, then surely that's as it is. We have to learn to operate within the system. So we can either be, driven or lead or escape or do whatever we want to do in terms of that. But our options are quite simple.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I had a comment I wanted to throw in, if you don't mind.
Sure.
Well, one of the things that's becoming evident and a lot more people are giving credence to is the fact that if we can think of something, then it becomes real. And there's certainly proof of that. And it's certainly an interesting idea, attitude, that would certainly be better than just surrendering.
That's a psychological idea you're talking about, right?
Exactly. Like,
government officials.
But there's evidence that when we can think of something, we can create it.
Well, sure. A lot of people actually do believe that, I'm not going
to
get it.
Well, what it is it boils down to what is belief? Is belief powerful or not? Now, I would say the belief is extremely powerful, and attitudes determine how we will survive or not.
Well, belief is also... Isn't belief also just a form of energy, SJ?
Well, belief is so many different things. First of all, it is energy. Our minds create energy. And what's really interesting is our hearts can create even more energy. Isn't that interesting? The ancients believed that the heart was the source of individuality, of intellect. of the mind that goes on to become another spirit. As you know, there's a lot of belief that we don't die, that our spirits exist and become another portion of the universe, another aspect of the universe, right?
Well, sure. I just wonder what it's going to take to break the stranglehold that these people have on the masses, SJ.
Well, in my opinion, the challenge of the 21st century is to learn how to think in ways that are important. You know, we have numerous threats and also a tremendous amount of positive humanity that we ignore mostly. We don't look for the good things by conditioning. We've been taught that the exciting, interesting things are mostly dramatically awful.